If you're a modem user and you live in the United States, now you can have quality, reliable internet access and support ACB radio at the same time. Easy Access USA gives you flat rate 56K internet access, two email accounts, and Usenet news groups for only $19.95 a month. And every month, $4 of that great price goes to ACB Radio, so we can keep bringing you your favorite shows and expanding our service. So don't delay. Switch today to Easy Access USA. Surf on over now to www.easyaccessusa.net. That's www.easyaccessusa.net. Or if you'd rather sign up over the phone, call them toll-free at 866-835-7872. That's 866-835-7872 between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern. Easy Access USA and ACB Radio, working together to bring you the best.
As well as ACB Radio Mainstream,
The Cafe,
ACB Radio Treasure Trove, you can hear
live, unpredictable internet
on the ACB Radio Interactive. ACB Radio Interactive. Playing music from
the 1930s and 40s.
The 50s and 60s.
The 1970s.
80s and 90s.
The hits of the new millennium.
ACB Radio Interactive comes to you from at least six time zones on three continents, bringing you the very best of
country,
top 40,
classic and modern rock,
new age,
folk,
the rare stuff out of the 50s,
jazz,
easy listening adult contemporary,
and more. Live, unpredictable internet radio.
ACB Radio Interactive.
For the latest breaking news stories, visit the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org. All the news, all the time. From the world's leading news organizations like CNN, the BBC, the New York Times, the Toronto Star, the Wall Street Journal, and more. That's all the news, all the time, in the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org.
If you'd like to keep up to date with what's happening on ACB Radio, then join ACB Radio Announce. It's an announcements-only email list that keeps you up to date with programming, scheduled outages, and other interesting pieces about the ACB Radio website. To join, send a message to majordomo at telepath.com and put subscribe ACB Radio-announce in the body of the message. That's majordomo at telepath.com with subscribe ACB Radio-announce in the body of your message. Keep in touch with ACB Radio, the station that's out of sight.
ACB Radio.org.
Good evening to you, no matter where you're listening, whether it be through the internet services of ACB Radio Mainstream or on radio information services across the United States, some of whom are, of course, carrying this broadcast. Welcome to the Polk County Convention Center in Des Moines. I'm Jonathan Mosen. It's my privilege to bring you coverage of the ACB's 40th annual convention, a very special anniversary for the American Council of the Blind. Back in 1961, this organization was formed. It's also a special convention because, as is the case every 2 years, a president will be elected as well as other officers. And this time, it is the last convention to be chaired by the incumbent president, Paul Edwards. In the American Council of the Blind, the Constitution does prescribe term limits, and Paul Edwards is about to preside over his last convention, having been president for 6 years. That undoubtedly will be one of the features of tonight's program. We will hear Paul Edwards' president's report. We'll tell you a little bit more about what's coming up on the program in just a moment. People are starting to gather now. There will be some pre-convention entertainment shortly, which we will bring you. And at 7:30, the formal proceedings will begin. If you'd like to contact us during the broadcast with any questions that you feel that we can answer for you, you're most welcome to do that. We enjoy hearing your feedback. You can contact us right here at the Plex, as it's affectionately known, by email. The address is convention@acbradio.org. That's convention@acbradio.org. We have already had an email message to that address with a question for this evening's broadcast, and that comes from Mike Gravett. Mike is in Pennsylvania, and he is keen to hear what the board of directors, who met yesterday in their traditional pre-convention board meeting, decided about the venue for the 2003 convention. We know we're going to Houston next year. Where are we going in 2003? And Mike was, of course, aware that Pittsburgh was in the running for that. Mike, no doubt you will be pleased to hear that Pittsburgh was the venue that was chosen yesterday by the board of directors for the ACB convention in 2003. Let's just briefly have a look at what's coming up, and then we'll patch you through to the entertainment. That entertainment is from the Chorale of Des Moines. It's a 45-voice children's chorus, and they're part of the Des Moines Songburst International Music Festival. When the proceedings begin, there will be some formalities, including, of course, the singing of the national anthem, and then you'll be able to hear Tom Harkin. Senator Harkin is somebody who has made a huge contribution as a legislator to the disability movement, and we'll be hearing from him. He has been instrumental in the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act and IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and so it should be an interesting address. As I mentioned, Paul Edwards will be giving his final President's Report, not only, I guess, recapping on the past year's ACB activities, but also taking a look at his whole presidency. Carl Augusto of the American Foundation for the Blind will be making a special presentation. And then there will be the presentation of awards. There are other things too, but let me patch you through to the entertainment now from the Chorale of Des Moines.
That surround the International Festival Songburst. And I'll be telling you more about Songburst as the evening goes on and give you an opportunity to perhaps attend other concerts if we inspire you to do so. Next, we'd like to continue our patriotic set with Battle Hymn of the Republic, featuring some of our changed voices. You'll be hearing some men later singing Battle Hymn of the Republic.
My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He has loosed the faithful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, fires of a hundred circling camps. They have builded him an altar in the evening dews and damps. I can read his righteous sentence by the dim and flaring lamps. His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Thank you very much. We would like to do some music now by American classic composers. Our Songburst Festival, which we host every other year, has different influences. We've done African influences, Scandinavian, South American, and this year we're doing American influences. And we would like to feature now some pieces that we will be doing in competition throughout the week. We have 10 choirs visiting from around the world, 2 from Venezuela, 1 from Hungary, 1 from Croatia, Colorado, Oklahoma, and Indiana, as well as 2 artist choirs, 1 from New Jersey, the American Boy Choir, and Cantus from Minnesota. So as you can hear, these kids will be meeting kids and adult musicians from many different places in the world, competing with them, having fun with them, and providing concerts. Each evening, we will be providing concerts. These are all open to the public, and we have brochures if you are interested in attending any of our concerts to hear some fine choirs in addition to the one you're hearing right now. So if you are interested, we will make these brochures available to you at your welcome table. The first piece that we would like to do is by a professor who used to teach nearby Des Moines, and his name is Sven Lekberg, and we will be singing Let All the World in Every Corner Sing.
My God.
Thank you very much. We're having a little difficulty hearing the piano. Hopefully you're able to hear it just fine. We would like to sing a few upbeat songs for you. These songs will be part of our spiritual and gospel competition. And we have some fabulous adjudicators coming from around the world who will also be part of our festival. And we would like to sing for you a piece called Go Where I Send Thee, followed by a jazzy version of Love is a Soul Thing. I'm going to change our plan here, and we're going to end our part of tonight's festivities with a suite of songs. This is an Americana suite, which was commissioned just for this choir and will be featured throughout the week at any of the concerts you may attend. And again, we've got information for those concerts. And if you think I'm plugging this concert, I am, because I think you would really enjoy listening to all the fine music. So we hope that you will enjoy Americana Suite and listen to the beautiful music of our accompanist Lois Harms. And I, Barbara Sletto, have very much appreciated this opportunity to sing for you. Thank you.
Open, take a breath of fresh.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've heard lots of opening entertainment. I don't think I've ever heard opening entertainment as good as this. And in case you do not have your programs with you, that was the Choral of Des Moines, a 45-voice children's chorus and part of Des Moines Songburst International Music Festival. Let's give them one more round of applause. Ladies and gentlemen, I could hear them. It was quite enough. Someone said I should have seen them. I just imagined them the way I wanted to. Ladies and gentlemen, we will not be having the presentation of colors, but I would like to ask that all of you would please rise. The very first year that I was president of the American Council of the Blind, we had a little glitch in our program, and someone saved me from that little glitch by her work in the Star Spangled Banner. Tonight she's playing the role of accompaniment, and that's the former president of Friends in Art, Janice Peterson. To sing the Star Spangled Banner this evening, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Linda Braithwaite, who is president of the Utah Council of the Blind. However, Linda is also a former soloist with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. It gives me great pleasure to introduce, to sing the Star Spangled Banner. I think I should quit while I'm behind. Linda Braithwaite and Janice Peterson. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would remain standing, the flag is to my right, and let us begin, as we should, our proceedings this evening with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the United States of America,
and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for its own.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to ask you to remain standing while we have the... You've got to learn to accept instruction. When you get to sit down, I will say, sit down. Trust me. Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that I introduce for the invocation this evening Reverend James Moody from the Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church from Des Moines, Iowa. Reverend Moody.
Hear the word of God. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loves is born of God and knows God. He that loves not knows not God, for God is love. In this was manifested the love of God toward us, because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. Herein is love, not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. Let us pray. God of light, God of life, God of love, we thank you for this gathering of the American Council for the Blind, Lord, as they have gathered here in Des Moines. And we ask, God, that you would go before this body and bring together all who have come to this place, that all might dwell and abide on one accord. We thank you, Lord, for the safe passage for all who have come, all who are on the way. And we thank you, Lord, for safe passage back to each and everyone's home. So we thank you for the officers, the leaders, those who serve, Lord, in this august body, and ask that you would be glorified in all that is done, all that is said, even all that is thought. In Jesus Christ's name we pray, and let the people together say amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Reverend. We appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to declare the 40th Annual Convention of the American Council of the Blind open. And now, you may be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, it takes a huge amount of work to pull together a convention of this size and this complexity. And one of the folks who has played a leading role in making things happen here in the great state of Iowa is the person who will be welcoming us this evening. It gives me immense pleasure to introduce to you someone who's come to be a very good friend of mine, Donna Seliger, President of the Iowa Council of the United Blind.
Thank you, Paul. 2 years ago, I came to this body and asked, if we plan it, will you come? And by George, you came. Thank you. I would like to welcome each and every one of you to our fine state. I'm sorry the weather was so hot yesterday, but it was beautiful today. I hope that you all have a great time here and take back good memories and sore feet. I'd like to ask that each of you stop by the Talking ATM in the Marriott and take out a little money there. The Bank of America has generously donated this machine to be at our convention for this week and for the next 5 days from 12 to 2 and 5 to 7 p.m. Someone will be there to instruct people on how to use a talking ATM. And if you've never used one, try it. It's fun. I'd like to thank all of the people who helped put this convention together and have made it such a success. Enjoy your week here. God bless you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the time in the evening where you have to put up with listening to me for a little while present you my presidential report. But there is good news. This is the last time you have to do it. So, I'm going to present you with my president's report. I may stumble occasionally because the technology has not been wonderful in terms of putting all of this onto a Braille light. But we'll see. In 1961, 40 years ago in Kansas City, an organization was created out of dissent and disappointment. I believe that the group who walked away from the National Federation of the Blind must have felt a sadness leaving friends behind in an organization they could no longer support but had valued and indeed loved. But I believe too that they felt a sense of vindication and elation, that their principles would triumph in the way that new organization would be structured. It would value democracy above all else, and it would protect the right of free speech and would value and encourage dissent. It would value the individual and protect the autonomy of affiliated organizations. The organization created in Kansas City was, of course, the American Council of the Blind. 40 years later, in 2001, in Des Moines, Iowa, we have come together to celebrate and remember and grow and change. We have grown from a tiny organization to one whose membership now exceeds 25,000 people. We began as an organization with few affiliates and have grown to the point where we now have well over 70. The vision that created ACB has persisted. 40 years later, we are still an organization where people come first and where individual rights and affiliate rights are crucial and valued. Tonight, I am making my last report to the American Council of the Blind as your president, and I will be talking to you about a year that has been full of accomplishment and full of uncertainty. It was a year where we won significant victories and faced enormous challenges. Perhaps more than anything, it was a year of consolidation and reaffirmation. As your president, I've had a part to play in all these areas. And as I talk about what we have won and where we have not, I hope you will reflect on what it means to us as an organization to have won the things we have won and not to have won those things we did not win. Just after our convention last year, the Federal Communications Commission agreed to adopt a rule that required limited production of prime-time video description in certain cities by the year 2003. This was a tremendous victory, and we helped to win it. An attempt launched later in the year to persuade the Commission to reconsider its rule failed. So now, opponents of video description have resorted to a suit in federal court declaring that the commission had overstepped its authority in issuing this rule. We have now hired attorneys and with our allies in the blindness community expect to prevail because we are right. We expected to be opposed by the Motion Picture Association. We expected to be opposed by the National Association of Broadcasters. And we expected to be opposed by the cable television industry. We did not expect to be opposed by the National Federation of the Blind. The Federation chose to file suit on its own against the Federal Communication Commission, essentially saying that blind people should not have descriptive video. What hypocrisy. This was just one of the surprises that the National Federation of the Blind had for us this year. Before getting to more of those, there are a number of things I would like us to celebrate together. Despite some bumps in the road put in at the last minute, we did end up with language in the Bible that traffic engineers use that began to set specifications for accessible traffic signals. This was the result of hard work by our Environmental Access Committee and many others. Debbie Grubb edited the second edition of our manual on this subject, and there is no question that ACB has been and will continue to be the lead organization making traffic safer for blind people. This year, more blind pedestrians did die. But we now have hope that needless deaths will be prevented because traffic signals work for blind people just as well as they do for those who can see. It sometimes seemed during the year that there just weren't enough people around to work on all the issues that we are championing. But we continued to press for the development of a comprehensive reform program that would make vending programs more effective and that would restore the Randolph-Shepard program to the position it deserves to occupy. Through our RSVA affiliate, we worked with the National Council of State Agencies Serving the Blind to host a conference in New Orleans last September, which was followed by meetings with them in November and March. We were also involved as one of the parties defending a suit filed by National Industries for the Severely Handicapped, NISH, that challenged the Randolph-Shepard vending priority. And we have prevailed three times already. The Randolph-Shepard vending program is important and crucial. It is the largest employer of people who are blind in the United States of America. It needs reform, and the American Council of the Blind and our Randolph-Shepard Vendors of America affiliate will see that the program is reformed and grows. The only recourse of those who would challenge the Randolph-Shepard priority now is to file with the Supreme Court. And if they dare, we'll fight for the rights of blind vendors there, too. I have an announcement to make now that's exciting to me because it has taken much time to make it happen. And so far, it's probably not very widely known. ACB has now entered into a contract with a mainstream academic publisher who will, we hope, be releasing the History of the American Council of the Blind later this year. And I want to make it clear that the American Council of the Blind will not be paying to have this book published. It will be released by Charles C. Thomas, a noted academic publisher who believes there is merit in publishing a work such as this and who believes that enough copies will be sold and that the history of the blindness movement is an important issue and one he wants to be involved in. There is still some final editing to be done, but Jim and Marjorie McGivern, the book's authors, have turned in the first draft of all the chapters now. I would like to thank all of the members of the History Committee because of the work that they have done, and also many others who have been of help to Jim and Marjorie McGivern. I'd also like to let you know that Jim McGivern is here and will be actually getting involved with some of you to put the finishing touches or make final corrections on the periods of history where you are discussed. I think that it's very important that the truth will finally be told in print about ACB's record. This year was also exciting for ACB on the broader world stage. Brian Charlson and I were able to attend the quadrennial meeting of the World Blind Union that was held in Melbourne, Australia last November. And I made a short presentation at a pre-seminar on management on the future of services for blind people and how agencies ought to prepare for what is to come. I was pleased to be able to do that, and I was also pleased to make an impromptu presentation about ACB Radio at another seminar. I believe, by the way, that ACB Radio is making ACB a household word all around the world for people who are blind. Later in the year in Grenada, Brian Charlson and I served as ACB's delegates to the North American and Caribbean region of the World Blind Union. This was an exciting meeting for a couple of reasons. The first of them was that at that meeting, we held a training program on leadership for blind women in the Caribbean. I was excited to participate, and ACB was ably represented by the co-chair of our Women's Concerns Committee, Miss Jill Tobin. It is also an indication of how far ACB has come in terms of our recognition and advancement within the World Blind Union, that one of the four delegates to the board of the World Blind Union from this region is now Brian Charlson of the American Council of the Blind. In May, I had the opportunity to visit London, Ontario, and present twice to one of the largest provincial chapters of the Canadian Council of the Blind. I was asked to provide them with some background about the American Council of the Blind and also to provide some training in advocacy, ACB style. I was glad to do this and also to meet with the president of the Canadian Council of the Blind, who is from Saskatchewan. I can tell you that the work of ACB is valued and it's thought of as a model in how things ought to be done in Canada. I'm very pleased to tell you that I believe we will be able to build close alliances with our friends in the Canadian Council of the Blind and in other consumer organizations of the blind in Canada. You'll learn more about this later this week because our international guest speaker this year at the American Council of the Blind is from the Canadian Council of the Blind, and his name is Gordon Dingle. As you run across him, please make him welcome. While we undoubtedly have lots of other international guests, I'd also like to take this opportunity to welcome to the American Council of the Blind's meeting Mr. Vangelis Nikias. Vangelis Nikias is the government representative for the Canadian National Institute of the Blind in Canada. He's from Ottawa, Ontario, and as you run across him, I hope you'll also make him welcome. We're pleased that CNIB is sending folks. We have this year, as in previous years, become known as an organization to emulate because of our democracy. This is the area where technology got fun, so I'm skipping the stuff that I already ad-libbed. Technology is wonderful. Yes. We said that already. Okay. I think we're here. Yuck. Almost. I thought we were. Yes. This is lovely. If we only had the choir again. Okay. I said this was a year of change and uncertainty, and it truly was. Not only did we find ourselves with a new administration in Washington, D.C., whose values are a matter of concern to us, we also find ourselves operating in a climate where there are real efforts being made to isolate the American Council of the Blind, and where there are real threats to the broader disability community. Perhaps the only benefit to come directly to people with disabilities out of the recent elections was the recognition that ballot reform has to happen. We are working hard at our affiliate level and at the national level to make sure that when the reform does happen, blind people will be able to vote privately and independently. We are determined that the secret ballot will become a reality for every blind citizen who wants to use it, and we will not settle for less. Though I talked about this a little in my last president's message, it would be remiss of me not to mention as well the fact that this year, as a result of the efforts of many of our affiliates and many at the national level, has seen the first full-scale deployment of talking ATM machines throughout the United States. So, hopefully, now that we can get money to make political contributions out of the bank, we will soon be able to vote for those people we want to contribute money to. Just as there is not enough time to talk to you about all of our successes, there's not enough time to discuss all the threats and uncertainties we face either. I want to focus on two issues on this side of the ledger. As most of you know, this spring, the Supreme Court issued their decision on the Garrett case. It was a split decision, 5-4, and by itself, the Garrett case will not have much significance in changing the way the world turns. It slightly limited the right of individuals who were employed by states. That's all it did. It was a very narrow and limited decision. The decision itself is not the issue, though. The problem arises because of the arguments that the justices used to arrive at their decision. Two arguments in particular are disturbing. Without getting too technical or involved, the justices argued that there was not clear enough evidence that there was a pattern of discrimination in state employment that states couldn't handle. There wasn't enough of a pattern of ongoing discrimination against people with disability to justify the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I know Senator Harkin, who was very much responsible for assuring that the ADA was passed, is here. And I suspect that he is just as disturbed as we are with an argument that diminishes the power of Congress and lessens the acceptance of endemic institutionalized patterns of discrimination that we know operate in every state. I think, or I hope, that people like Senator Harkin are just a little insulted by the suggestion that they would pass a law that was unnecessary. The second argument that's a part of the Garrett case, since I've lost my place again. This doesn't usually happen to me, you know. Oh, well. The second argument that is worrying is their contention that the Garrett incident, that the Garrett case concerns limiting the ability of people who are disabled to receive appropriate accommodations in state employment. Essentially, what the Garrett decision said, or the majority Garrett decision said, was that there may be times when it's appropriate for states not to hire people if providing accommodations is too expensive. While they were concerned that this was not very nice morally, they suggested there were times when it might be rational. I would like to suggest to every single one of you that there is no situation where it is ever rational to abrogate the rights of disabled people to accommodation in state employment. We will not see our hard-earned rights limited one jot, and we will find ways to make certain that the limited setback this decision represents is turned around. Unfortunately, the Garrett decision is not an isolated incident. It's part of a pattern of actions that are aimed at limiting the rights of people with disabilities. Senator Harkin has very recently been working to prevent the due process clauses of IDEA from being limited by those who view disciplining unruly students as more important than protecting the due process rights of students with disabilities. The American Council of the Blind will continue to work with Senator Harkin and others to make sure that the rights of disabled children in school are not abrogated. The other major issue that has recently appeared on the horizon concerns undisguised attacks launched by the National Federation of the Blind on the American Council of the Blind, both in their May and June issues of the Braille Monitor. I will not dignify those articles with a response because they're essentially full of sound and fury and signify absolutely nothing. I would also urge all of you to think very carefully about how we ought to respond. I've said many times that the blindness community is very small and that we cannot afford to appear to be divided if specialized services for people who are blind are to be protected. I have also said many times that we will continue to work with the Federation when we can. And I say that again now. For the record, as far as I'm aware, absolutely no one in the leadership of the American Council of the Blind hates nor wishes to kill the National Federation of the Blind. Most of the time, it is true, we choose to ignore it. Our task, and our only task, is to make things better for people who are blind. That is what we are about, and that is what we will do. Let the Federation make all the speeches it wants. We will make descriptive video happen in prime time. Let the Federation rant and rave and wax eloquent. we will save the lives of blind people by advocating and getting accessible pedestrian signals. Let the Federation oppose things. We will create change. The most serious threat the National Federation of the Blind poses to the American Council of the Blind is its ability to divide us. I urge everyone to recognize all that we have done and all that we will yet do. That is what we must focus on. Let us not spend undue effort trying to decide how to respond to attacks by the Federation. We'll continue to fight for the things we think are important to people who are blind, whether the NFB likes it or not. We will continue to reserve our right to question how public funds are used, and will ask those who use them whether the creation of the Library and Training Center at the National Center is the most appropriate way to spend money. Is it appropriate to spend funds on buildings and training when 70% of those who are blind still don't have jobs? Maybe there are ways to justify that expenditure, but we certainly have the right to ask how. That is the right of every citizen, and it's certainly the right of a consumer organization of blind people. I want to publicly and unequivocally say to all of you that I am proud of Charlie Crawford, our executive director. I'm sorry to say that I envy him Charlie's Law. And I'd love to go down in history for something like that. So I will. Here is Paul's commandment.
Thou shalt ignore the slings and arrows of the National Federation of the Blind and go on making the lives of blind people better.
This is my last message to you as president. I want to thank so many people who have made my presidency possible. My officers, my board of directors, the national office, and the ACB office in Minneapolis. I also want particularly to thank Gail, my best friend, without whom I simply could not have done this job. She not only makes sure that I look good, but supports me in so many ways. She is my right hand and sometimes my left one, too. Will you join me in thanking her for making it possible? Leaving the presidency is a bittersweet experience. There are days when I am so glad that I won't have to do this anymore. There are other days when I just can't imagine not being president. There are times when I think of ACB as a precious but sometimes obnoxious child I've been allowed to help rule. And it's very hard to let go of your kid. I will take with me so many memories that are wonderful, but the most long-lasting will be the individual memories of each of you and how much easier you made my job. Thank you so much for the privilege of serving all of you. It's truly been an honor. Thank you. thank you very much. I really, truly do appreciate that. I didn't even ask you to stand. Ladies and gentlemen, it's sort of fitting that the very last time I get to address you as president, I have the opportunity to introduce to you someone who I have admired for almost as many years as I've been involved in the disability movement. There are individuals who, by their influence, by their openness, by their preparedness to stand up and be counted, to speak out, make a difference. There are lots of statements that are made about politicians and about how crass and uninvolved they are. None of those statements apply to our next speaker. That individual was prepared before 1990 to face a tremendous amount of opposition from a Republican administration that was interested, for the most part, in trying very hard not to pass the Americans with Disabilities Act to make it happen. Iowa can be extremely proud of our next speaker, and I hope that you will all join me in welcoming, with some words for us that I know we will all value, Senator Tom Harkin from the great state of Iowa.
Thank you so much. Oh, you're wonderful. You know, you're a great speaker. Thank you. Bring me the time. Man, you're great. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you all so very much. Well, thank you all so very much for a warm welcome. Thank you to Paul Edwards. You know, when I came up here this evening, Paul said, well, Senator, you know, I get to give my president's report before you speak. I thought to myself, oh, no. I've sat through president's reports before. They're so boring. They put you to sleep. I gotta tell you, this was the best president's report I have ever sat through anywhere. Man. I'll tell you, this guy is a tough act to follow. I just said to Paul when I came up here, I said, man, I said, you give one hell of a speech. I said, now you're giving up this presidency. I said, how about the Senate? How about Congress? I want to campaign for him. Yeah. Whoa. Boy, how I can come down and campaign for you anytime.
All right. I'll hold you that.
Yeah, you can hold me that. I mean it, too. Well, I also want to thank his partner, Gail. Gail Krause, thank you so much. I want to thank as well Donna Seliger, our president of the Iowa Council of the United Blind. Now, I hope I got this name right, but Linda Braithwaite for the National Anthem. My goodness, what a great voice. Magnificent. And I'm privileged to be sitting up here with your first vice president, Brian Charlson, and his wife, Kim. And they're doing a great job for you also. Well, Paul, I've got to say your introduction is a heck of a lot better than the one I received the other night. I was giving a speech and he wasn't the president, he was just the MC, but he introduced me and said, our next speaker will certainly add something to the evening. I estimate about 45 minutes. Well, I'll do my best to keep it a lot shorter than that. But I just want to tell you I am so proud that the American Council of the Blind chose to join us here in Iowa for your 40th annual convention. You are a progressive organization, and this is a progressive state, and we welcome you here. I've traveled across America as a United States Senator. Now this, I'm in my 17th year and 10 years before that in the House of Representatives. But no matter where I've gone, I'm always glad to be back home in Iowa. People here have got great combination of character and personality, and I know that you'll come to love Iowans during your stay here, and you'll know what I'm talking about. First and foremost, I want to thank you and congratulate you as you celebrate your 40th anniversary year. Since 1961, the Council has worked to improve the well-being of all blind and visually impaired people. You were there, and I remember it well, in 1990, when we reached the mountaintop, and during all that debate and all the years that came before us, you were there, making sure that the Americans with Disabilities Act became the law of the land, and I thank you for being there. It's a simple American principle that each of us deserves an equal chance at success. It's about opportunity. We're not looking for someone to do it for us. We don't want the government mandating an outcome. What we do want is the government to make sure that every American has the chance to go as far as their abilities will take them. Well, that wasn't the way it always was here in America before the passage of the ADA. The day before the ADA became law, a person with a disability who wanted equal treatment held the short end of the stick against hundreds of years of discrimination and ignorance. On the day before the ADA became law, a person with a disability stood alone against governments and corporations. But on the day after July the 26th, 1990, that one person became 54 million. On July the 26th, 1990, the short end of the stick became a powerful weapon, backed by a new social compact and the law of the land. On that day, the Americans with Disabilities Act took its place among the great civil rights laws in our country's history. On that day, we as a nation committed ourselves to the principle that disability does not limit a person's right to participate in the cultural, economic, educational, political, and social mainstream. July 26, 1990 marks Independence Day for every American with a disability. As the chief sponsor of the Americans with Disabilities Act and the chairman of the Disability Policy Subcommittee, when that law passed and was signed into law, it was the proudest day of my public service. To me, Iowa holds a special place in the history of disability rights. You see, a while back, a reporter asked me when I started working on the Americans with Disabilities Act. Well, the first thing out of my mouth was 1985, when I first went to the United States Senate from the House. But when I stepped back and thought about it, I realized the work really began much earlier than that. The inspiration for my work on disability issues and the ADA was born here in Iowa, where I was born, and where I learned many lessons about how people with disabilities were treated by society. I learned at a young age that the worst way to hurt someone is not the crude insult. It is to disregard them, dismiss them, brush them aside. It denies their humanity. It treats them as something foreign, separate, unequal, even invisible. My drive to see the ADA become law came out of my experiences with a very special person in my life. He taught me at a very early age that people with disabilities could do anything they set their minds to do, and that people should be judged on the basis of their abilities and not their disabilities. That person was my brother Frank. Growing up with Frank taught me much of what I would need to know when it came time to write the ADA. My brother Frank became deaf as a child. And as a young boy, taken away from his home and his community, and sent away to a school across the state at the Iowa State School for the Deaf. Well, in those days, people used to refer to it as that school for the deaf and the dumb. My brother's response was, "I may be deaf, but I'm not dumb." My inspiration for the ADA also happened when, as a child, I went to a store with my older brother, Frank, and the salesperson at the store ignored him, looked right through him, like he was invisible. Instead, the salesperson turned to me and asked me what he wanted. The seeds of the ADA were planted when Frank applied for a driver's license and was told that no, deaf people can't drive. In school, Frank was told that he had three career options. He could be a baker, a cobbler, or a printer's assistant, and nothing else. Well, I made a commitment to myself back then that if I ever got in a position where I could do something about it, that I would make sure that one day, when people looked at a person with a disability, they would see a person, not a disability. My brother Frank passed away a year ago this last month, and I miss him very much. He was a great brother and a great friend and a great inspiration to me. He was proud of what the ADA meant to people with disabilities, and I'm glad to say that attitudes are changing for the better here in Iowa and across America. The ADA means something special to each of us here today. For me, it's about Frank. The legislative work may have begun in 1985, but as you can see, the seeds were planted in me long before. Well, passing the ADA was a tremendous victory, but we've had some ups and downs since that day, 11 years ago. Paul spoke about the Garrett case, one of the downs. I can't tell you when I sat there in the Supreme Court and listen to the arguments, I thought surely those justices would see clearly what we had seen 15 years before when we began having hearings. And in my amicus brief filed with former Senator Bob Dole, we pointed out time after time after time where state governments had discriminated. I don't mean just private businesses. I mean state governments. So it was sadness, with sadness and shock, when we received the 5-4 decision. We had the evidence. Well, all I can tell you is that it may have been a limited setback, but I can assure you it was a narrow loss, and we are going to work as hard as we can to shape new legislation to overcome this decision. But there were some ups. For those of us who believe in independent living, the Olmstead case was a great victory. This case enhanced our position of ensuring that the support and dollars go directly to the individual to support community-based independent living programs. And as we know, one of the keys to achieving independence for all sight-impaired individuals is adequate funding for independent living services for older individuals who are blind programs. So Olmsted enhanced our position. But we've got to do a lot more than that. And I'm pleased to say, as the chair of the Health and Human Services Appropriations Subcommittee, I've worked to double funding for this important initiative over the past 5 years. It started at $10 million. We now have it at $20 million, and we're not going to stop there. By providing older Americans with training skills of daily living and travel and communication, as well as providing for adaptive devices and family counseling, independence can be achieved. And again, as the chair of this subcommittee that funds this program, I pledge to you that I will fight for the funding necessary to help every American who is blind to achieve the goal of independent living. You know, we often talk in government about how we should be sending the money directly to the person and not some government program. Well, I agree. And that's why I've introduced the Medicaid Community and Attendant Support Services Act, or MCASA, as it's known. This legislation says that money that comes through Medicaid should go directly to the individual. Let the individual decide how they want to use that money and not some government bureaucrat. You ought to decide how to use that money. Well, another up. We also won a great victory. Recently, when the Supreme Court, by decision of 7-2, affirmed that the Professional Golfers Association decision not to allow Casey Martin to use a cart was directly contrary to the requirements of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I guess the court realized that golf is about how you drive on the fairway, not about how you drive the golf cart on the fairway. The Casey Martin decision was important for all Americans with disabilities, particularly the blind, because it made clear that to overcome the legal mandates of reasonable accommodation, you need to have a better argument than, quote, "that's the way we've always done it." You got to have a better argument than "it's tradition." The way we address accessibility and job qualifications cannot be viewed in light of the old ways and of so-called traditions that acted as barriers to people with disabilities. Now, I have a great deal of respect for tradition. But when a tradition acts as a barrier, when it puts a wall between individuals who can do the job and the job they want to do, it is time to do away with the traditions. Now, there is a warning signal. In the fall, the Supreme Court, will be looking at two other ADA cases on the definition of disabilities and reasonable accommodation. I will be following the progress of these issues closely, as I know you will, and I will be filing the appropriate amicus briefs. But the Casey Martin situation is clearly a special circumstance. Most of us are seeking something much more basic. Advocates, such as yourselves, simply want to make certain that every American who is blind or visually impaired will have the chance to live independently, to fully participate in the cultural, economic, educational, political, and social mainstream. At a minimum, every American deserves that chance. And that's why we have to meet the challenges that remain. Another program that is funded through my Appropriations Subcommittee is the American Printing House for the Blind. In 2000, it was funded at $10.1 million. The President asked for $10.2 million for 2001. I didn't like that. I boosted it to $12 million for the American Printing House for Boston. And I know that Tuck Tinsley from Kentucky is here with us this evening, and I'm delighted to see you. Tuck Tinsley is here from the American Printing House for the Blind. For so many Americans with disabilities, transportation is the last remaining barrier between them and success in the workplace. That's why public transportation and mass transportation is so critical. I have worked year after year to support mass transit, to acquire extra dollars for buses, particularly rural vans for the point-to-point service so important in rural areas. In America today, employment is nearly impossible without transportation. And we know that real independence is not possible without good employment. So we need to keep fighting for improved transportation solutions. And we also need to look at the issue of separate audio programming as a way to enhance the quality of life for Americans who are blind. Now, Paul, my friend, I want you to know a little history on something else here.
Good.
I told you about my brother Frank, who was deaf. Well, he liked watching movies, and he liked to watch TV, but he never really could understand all that was going on because he couldn't hear. Well, finally in the 70s, they invented a device that you could set on top of your TV. It was a big old box, and it would provide for closed captioning. It would print on the bottom of the screen the words that were being said. Well, you had to have this big box. It cost a couple of $100s, and it worked okay, except very few programs had that. And I remember I helped deliver the first one to then-President Jimmy Carter in the White House, the first one ever made. I got the third or fourth one from my brother Frank. What the heck, if I can't help my brother Frank by being a congressman, who the heck am I going to help? Anyway, my point is this. It worked, but my brother told me, well, he said, that's all right. He said, but when I travel, he said, I can't take it with me. Yeah. You know, and it's big and bulky and costs a lot of money. So then we set up the National Closed Captioning Institute to close caption. But then along came the new technologies, the new computer chips. Guy came into my office one day and said, I think we can make a chip to put in a TV, and you don't need those boxes anymore. So I, being chairman of the subcommittee on disability policy, I started having hearings, and I introduced a bill. I introduced a bill to mandate that every television sold in America with a size 13-inch screen or bigger had to have this chip built right within it. And that this had to take effect after 1996. Well, then we had hearings on my bill. Oh, my goodness, Paul. The TV companies that came in and said, oh, the sky is going to fall. Oh, this is going to cost so much money. Every television set will cost $200 more. Scared the dickens out of everybody. But my friends in the computer industry said, no, maybe $50, maybe $25. It depends on how many. And if you really get this through and we mass produce them, why, it might even come down more than that. And so, armed with that information, I went to work in the Congress. I got the support. We got the bill passed. Got it signed into law. This was about 1993. So 4 years later, it had to go into effect. It went into effect. Now every television has that. Now, here's the point of my story. Do you know how much Sony and Panasonic and all those other TV manufacturers, how much they charge now extra to put that chip in the TV? Nothing. It is so cheap, it costs nothing. You're right. You need to do it. Now, that brings me to separate audio programming. They'll tell you that there's all these problems, don't you know? And it's going to cost all this money, don't you know? And how can we burden everybody to get this done, don't you know? Well, when you hear those arguments, you tell them you talked to old Tom Harkin and you've heard that story before. And you don't want to hear it again. We ought to be able to do the same thing with descriptive, separate audio program for people who are blind, just as we did with people who are deaf. Technology. The technology is there, and all we got to do is push ahead on it. The time is right to do it right now. Well, as I've mentioned, the ADA is about equal rights. And there is no more basic right in this land of freedom than the right to vote. So many Americans were disenfranchised in the last election. And many of them were Americans with disabilities. When any one voter is excluded from the process, a vital voice goes unheard. And we have to meet this issue of voting rights for Americans with disabilities head on. Now, I heard the other day, a story that President Bush and Vice President Cheney and Catherine Harris from your state of Florida, Paul Edwards. Now, I see you've all heard of Catherine Harris. Well, it seems to me the three of them got in a boat and they went out for a boat ride on the ocean one day and a big storm came up and their little boat was sinking and it was going to capsize and they only had one life preserver. So they decided to take a boat. Edwards, I see why you like leading this crowd. They're way ahead of me already, I can tell you that. So they took a vote. They counted the votes, and Bush got one vote, and Cheney got one vote, and Catherine Harris got one vote. And they said, well, this isn't right. We're going to have a recount here and a re-vote. So they recounted the votes. Bush got one vote. Cheney got one vote. Catherine Harris got 577 votes. Well, that's why I've joined my colleague in the Senate, Senator John McCain, and asking the General Accounting Office to study the question of voter accessibility for citizens with disabilities. On Election Day last November, the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, sent election observers to more than 100 counties across the country to collect data on the accessibility of polling places and of the ballots. They specifically sought to address the issue of accessibility issues for the blind. As you know, most of the voting technology used today is inaccessible to as many as 8 million Americans who are blind. They are forced to rely on the assistance of others when they cast their ballot, denying them, as Paul said earlier, the secrecy that others are afforded. And they have no way of ensuring that they cast their vote properly so that their voice will be heard. Now again, my friends, this is another case where the technology is there. We just have to have the will to do it. Last summer, on the occasion of the 10th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, Vice President Gore had a big reception up at the Vice President's mansion. A lot of people were there, and there was an exhibit of all the latest technologies covering a lot of different things. And they had one machine there, a voting machine, that was thoroughly accessible for everyone. no matter what disability, no matter what language you spoke. And for a blind person, it was where you could pick up a headset and you could put it on. And I went through it. And they had a Braille thing at the bottom there. And it would say, okay, now you have come in to vote. The candidates for president are Al Gore and Joe Lieberman for president and vice president on the Democratic ticket. Governor George Bush, Mr. Richard Cheney on the Republican ticket. Then it went down to the socialist ticket. Then it went down to four or five and listed them all. Now, if you wish to vote for Al Gore, you punch this. If you wish to vote for the socialist, you punch this. And you could sit there and you hit it. And then the voice came out and said, now, you just voted for Al Gore and Joe Lieberman. Now, if that is correct, punch this button once. If it's incorrect, punch it twice. And if you made a mistake, it'll say, okay, we're going to do it again. And it walked you right through the ballot so you know exactly for whom you voted. There was no mistake that could be made. And they could program it for all different kinds of languages. So don't tell me that we can't ensure that each one of you here tonight can't vote and vote in secrecy and ensure that the ballot you cast is accurate and is going to be counted. And we ought to get it done before the next election. We must never forget that prohibiting discrimination is not the same as ensuring equal opportunity. In the words of President Johnson when he signed the Civil Rights Act, you cannot shackle men and women for centuries and then bring them to the starting line of a race and say, you see, we're giving you an equal chance. That's why we have to continue to defend the ADA and build on its foundation. There are lives that remain in the shadow of discrimination. There is a great deal more to be done. I think former President Clinton said it best. He said, in the new century, we need the talents and involvement of every person. We can leave no one behind. When a child with a disability is denied equal access to education, we have not only failed that child, we have squandered an important contribution to America's future. When a reasonable accommodation is not provided by an employer, that employer not only violates American law, they are cheating our country out of a valuable workforce. We owe it to those who came before us, who never had the chance to live under the ADA, to keep fighting this fight. We will meet each battle. We will continue to push ahead. In the end, we will win. Now more than ever, I need your help, your input, and your suggestions, so we can keep up the fight in the United States Senate. So thank you for asking me to join you today. I am honored to be here. Enjoy your conference here in Des Moines. Our farm economy is pretty lousy, so spend lots of money. Our economy can use it. In closing, let me just say, celebrate your accomplishments. Rededicate yourselves to moving forward. And I look forward to continuing to work hand in hand as we march on. Thank you very much for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a terrible thing when a senator of the United States of America lies. He said I was a tough act to follow. He was a tough act to precede. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the opportunity to be an equal opportunity organization tonight. It's always important, I think, when the American Council of the Blind gives awards, but it's also important when the American Council of the Blind affords the opportunity for an award to be presented by another organization, and that's one of the things that we're going to do this evening. The next person who will present the award this evening, that you'll find out about in a moment, is a gentleman who I first met way back in the early 1980s, and he was best known at that time for his support of issues that related to people who are blind and for his capacity to play a mean folk guitar. Since then, he has gone on to much bigger and better things, usually doesn't bring his guitar with him because he's too busy to play it. But some of the best memories I have of our next presenter are those spent quietly together singing and celebrating America's greatness through its folk music. There is probably no ally the American Council of the Blind has who is more interested in making certain that the blindness community stays together and that we can develop a common vision of where we're going than our next presenter. Perhaps in our generation, he will go down in history as the person who sought hardest to create and maintain an environment where peace could happen in the blindness community. It gives me immense pleasure to introduce to you, from the American Foundation for the Blind, Mr. Carl Augusto.
You're welcome. You deserve every minute.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening. First of all, it's great to be back at a national convention of the American Council of the Blind once again, and I'll keep on coming back. It's great to be with all of you. The American Foundation for the Blind and the American Council of the Blind have enjoyed a rich tradition of cooperation and collaboration over the years, and I know that will continue. On behalf of the American Foundation for the Blind, I'd like to thank Paul Edwards for his friendship, for his leadership, and salute him for 6 outstanding and dedicated years as president of the American Council of the Blind. Paul, I know your tireless efforts will not end at the end of this week, so we look forward to continuing working with you. Each year, the American Foundation for the Blind presents access awards to individuals and organizations that open up doors for people who are blind or visually impaired. These access awards are presented at our annual Josephine L. Taylor Leadership Institute. The American Council of the Blind, its affiliates, and American Council of the Blind members have been honored in the past with access awards. Notably, several years ago, we were very proud to give an access award to Guide Dog Users of America for opening Hawaii to guide dogs throughout the world. And we've also honored notables among the American Council of the Blind, including Charlie Crawford and the coalition of advocates opening up technology for blind and visually impaired people. This year, we presented another access award to another ACB affiliate. And I'm going to be showing you a clip of that presentation. The voice you're going to hear is a familiar voice to many of you. The MC of the event this year was none other than Alex Trebek of the Jeopardy program. And so you're going to hear his voice, and let's find out what he says. Listen.
We now honor the California Council of the Blind for a campaign that culminated in major financial institutions committing to the installation of talking ATMs. Automated teller machines. Known as the Talking ATM Team, members from the California Council of the Blind work with disability rights lawyers Laney Feingold, Linda Dardarian of the law firm of Saperstein, Goldstein, Demchak, and Baller, and the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund. Now, as society turns to automation and technology to replace human services, the efforts of this particular team have ensured that people who are blind or visually impaired will not be excluded. California now has over 300 talking ATMs in operation, and one of the financial institutions has committed to a full national rollout of talking ATMs as well. So please join us now in welcoming Jeff Tom, Vice President of the California Council of the Blind, and Linda Dardarian of the law firm of Saperstein, Goldstein, I love saying it, Saperstein, Goldstein, Demchak, and Baller.
They're clapping louder than you are, guys.
On behalf of the California Council of the Blind and its president, Catherine Skivers, it gives me great pleasure to accept this award. Like the American Foundation for the Blind, the Council has long been a pioneer in finding ways to better the lives of those who are blind or visually impaired. Although there is much work yet to be done, it gives us great pride to know that, through the work of Linda Dardarian, her colleagues, and many members of the Council, many blind and visually impaired Californians and others are now using ATMs independently and easily. And just on a personal note, I can't tell you what a feeling of freedom it is to go into a bank and not have to go up to a teller and just use that talking ATM like... It's one of the easiest things in the world to accomplish, and it is truly a feeling of freedom. And I want to thank Linda and her colleagues for all of their work. Again, on behalf of the Council, I thank you for this wonderful award.
Six years ago, the California Council passed a resolution to take action to get Wells Fargo to make its ATMs accessible to persons who are blind or visually impaired. At the time, Wells Fargo's response was that the Braille labels on ATMs were sufficient to ensure their accessibility to visually impaired customers. A lot of progress has been made since then. Today, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and Citibank have made commitments to deploy thousands of talking ATMs that provide voiced instructions and feedback for completing banking transactions privately through an earphone jack. Right now, the banks have ATMs on the street in both California and Florida, and Bank of America has committed to rolling out talking ATMs nationwide. And many, many more, hundreds of thousands of ATMs are on their way. And other banks are also catching on. There's a cultural shift taking place in the banking industry, and we applaud the financial institutions that are currently in discussions with the California Council and the AFB in an effort to work cooperatively to make talking ATMs an even broader reality. Indeed, it is our belief that the earphone jack on ATMs will soon be a ubiquitous symbol of independence for people who are blind or visually impaired. We are very proud and excited to accept this award on behalf of the Council and the individual members of the Council who worked so hard on this effort and the legal team. You make our work worthwhile, and we thank you very much.
Changing you on the money you are getting back. I mean, if you're asking for $100, they could shortchange and give you $80. How are you doing? They can't do that?
No.
You can't, but how do you know they're 20s or 10s? You see the questions that are coming? What do we say? The 10s weigh a little less. This room is like a roach. The room is filled with comics.
Jim Gibbons of the National Industries for the Blind said, the 20s feel differently. That's what he said in the background. Now, why are we doing this tonight? You heard CCB receiving the award. Well, first of all, it's fun to honor a major accomplishment and what the California Council of the Blind and, indeed, many of you from other states have done has been a major accomplishment for people who are blind. So that's one of the reasons. But the other reason was that Catherine Skivers, president of CCB, was unable to be there that day. And Kathy has been such a powerhouse in California, within the ACB, and has been such a part of this fight to make ATMs accessible to blind and visually impaired people. We wanted to do it again. So, ladies and gentlemen, please recognize Catherine Skivers, president of the California Council of the Blind.
Thank you so much. I'm recovering, if you'll give me just a minute. I didn't know I was going anywhere. I wondered who else besides us was getting an access award. Then he did it again. And then I got an elevator lift. And I have to take the time to tell you, Carl, that I did this once at Southwest Airlines, and I promised God if I ever got out of that lift, I'd never take another one. And only you could have caused this. On behalf of the California Council of Blind, I thank you again. We have had some wonderful things happen in California, and we have had wonderful support from AFB in the person of Gil Johnson, the Executive Director West, and this president of the group up here from AFB. And this meant just a lot to us, and to have you honor us, I'm just so happy to have the opportunity to thank you for the support you've given us. And I think any time that AFB has been able to help ACB and us, you have. And I thank you so much. This really means a lot to us. And thanks for doing it again. I want to know how you got... Do you have our award here somewhere?
I think it's being sent here.
Oh-ho.
We're going to have another third time to present you another award.
Okay, I have to be careful. I'm warned to be careful the rest of the week. I believe that ever since I went through the maze the first time. Thank you again, Carl, and thank you all. I'm not taking a chance coming up in that thing again. I'm going to do whatever I got to do while I'm up here. I know that contributions should be made to the treasurer. But I tell you, Paul, you know, when I broke my foot 5 times, I didn't cry. And when I have seen awful things happen, I didn't cry. But gosh darn you, when you sure got me a while ago. So instead of giving this to the treasurer, on behalf of the California Council of Blind, its board of directors membership, it's my pleasure to give you this contribution from CCB of $10,000. I'm going to give it to you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this evening gets better and better. While responding to Kathy, let me say this. Earlier this year, the American Council of the Blind got to a place where we weren't sure we were going to be able to do all of the things that we want to do for our membership. And I put out a call in December for our affiliates and asked if they could help. And so many affiliates did. the work of ACB went on, not because of anything we did at the national level, but because all of you made it happen. Thank you. One of the traditions of Sunday evening is the presentation of Board of Publication Awards, and to accomplish that this evening, it gives me great pleasure to introduce someone who has worked tirelessly over the last few years to reshape, rebuild, reorganize, and reorient one of the most important arms of the American Council of the Blind. She is now stepping down as chair of the Board of Publications. It'll be ACB's loss, but I'd like to applaud, recognize, and ask you to value the work that she's done to build the Board of Publications into a force that assures freedom of speech will happen not only in print, but on the Internet and with ACB Radio. It gives me great pleasure to introduce the person perhaps more responsible for the new Board of Publications, Ms. Kim Charlson.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. And I first want to recognize my colleagues on the Board of Publications. They've been a tremendous group of individuals to work with, and their contribution and the time they've spent has been invaluable to me and to ACB. First, appointed member Jay Doudna from Pennsylvania. Winifred Downing from California. Mike Duke from Mississippi. Charles Hodge from Virginia. And our ex officio non-voting member, ACB's webmaster, Erlene Hughes from Indiana. The Board of Publications has the honor of identifying and recognizing those in ACB who make a contribution and who make a difference. Tonight, I have the honor of presenting a Lifetime Special Achievement Award. Last year, you may recall that ACB recognized the achievements of Hollis Liggett, the editor of the Braille Free Press. This year, we chose to recognize a woman who was so courageous during the early years of ACB, during the disagreements and disputes and the formation of ACB. We recognize Marie Boring for her special contributions as the first editor of the Braille Forum in 1962. Marie could not be here with us this evening, but I've had the opportunity to speak with her as well. She has some remarks that she recorded with the assistance of Mike Duke, and I'd like you to hear her words. Then Jim McGivern will come to the podium and assist me, and we'll let you hear some of her writings. This is another sampling of material that will be in the ACB history next year for all of you to read yourselves. So here is Marie Boring in her own words to speak to you.
Hello, everybody. I'm not going into what I did during the Civil War in the NFB in the late 50s and early 60s, except to say that I became a member of the Federation in 1955. I was elected to the Board of Directors in 1956. I was thrown off the Board of Directors in 1959. And in 1960, the North Carolina Federation of the Blind was suspended on Friday afternoon. We were the test case. And when that worked, they suspended four other states on Sunday night. During that year, 1960-61, they suspended 10 other states. That meant that 15 states were out of the Federation. We decided that we would form a new organization. But George Card asked us to wait until he had a chance to go around the country and see if he could find enough votes to get us back into the Federation. Well, believe it or not, he did just that. We went to the convention in 1961 in Kansas City, believing that we would be back in the Federation. However, at the first meeting of that convention, the president of the NFB, Dr. Tenbrook, disqualified the North Dakota vote. That meant, of course, that we lacked one vote being able to get back into the Federation. At that time, a few of us walked out of the convention and went to another hotel and formed the American Council of the Blind. I was elected to the first board of directors. I was a member of the first Constitution and Bylaws Committee. And then they asked me to serve as editor of the magazine, which we hoped to publish. That was the very thing that I liked to do because when I went to college, I was an English major, and I wanted to be a journalist. But they told me in 1937 that blind people couldn't be journalists. So I believed them, and I didn't go into that. But you can see that being editor of the forum was the way that I could serve the council best. I enjoyed every minute of my service as forum editor, and I'd like to say that I appreciate very much the council's giving me the opportunity to serve in that capacity. And I thank you very much.
Jim? Oh, there you are. Okay. Next, I'm going to turn the mic over to Jim McGivern to read to you a brief selection of Marie's work. Jim.
Good evening. Marie has summarized thereby about six of our chapters very quickly. However, what I'd like to do is tell you a couple of things or read a couple of things that she read in the course of those developments, which could be confusing without the context. But in 1959, Marie Boring expressed her obvious pleasure over the fact that all five of her officers of the North Carolina Federation were dedicated independents, that is, that they voted not to side with the Tenbrook Jernigan clan. She had declined appointment to the original editorial board of the Free Press because of her position as president of the North Carolina Federation, but was still very much involved. In fact, in her letter congratulating Hollis Liggett on his article as a real masterpiece, she acknowledged that I shall probably be much more outspoken from now on than I was when I was president of the NCFB. And she remarks in passing that the latest phrase my parakeet has learned is to say, Tenbrook must go. On April 21st in 1960, she wrote the fateful letter that was going to initiate the whole process that would get North Carolina thrown out of the NFB. She wrote it to John Nagel and says, the North Carolina Federation opposes H.R. 9801, establishing the minimum wage for blind workers in sheltered workshops at 80% of the normal wage. Several members felt that this would place on the statutes of our nation the admission that blind workers in sheltered workshops can reach no higher than 80% of the productive power of average citizens. In short, we would endorse the bill if it eventually worked up to 100% of the minimum wage, but could not accept a bill which conceded that blind workers are second-rate employees. That's what got her thrown out. On October 20th of 1960, she wrote to Floyd Qualls to say that she was delighted with the latest issue of the Free Press. I had been a little apprehensive as to how Hollis would handle the North Carolina story, but he did a superb job. And she said she was still trying to figure out why Ten Broeck was so ruthless in his attacks against the women who would not fall at his feet. Could it be that he feels dominated by his wife? Whatever the cause, it is obvious that he has a special fear of women who think for themselves. The four she was referring to, or the three others besides herself, were Juliet Bint Esterly, M.J. Hills Schmidt, and Alma Murphy. And I think we'll have to leave it at there. There may be some place where you can read the rest of the story before too long. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. And the plaque reads, American Council of the Blind Board of Publications Special Achievement Award, presented to Marie Boring in recognition of her service as the first editor of the Braille Forum, 1961 to 1966, and her dedication to the principles of freedom of conscience and expression that continue to guide ACB today and into the future. Presented on the occasion of ACB's 40th anniversary, Des Moines, Iowa, July 1st, 2001. Jim McGivern has graciously agreed to hand carry this plaque back to North Carolina when he returns next Sunday and to visit Marie and present it to her personally. Thank you, Jim, for that extra special attention. The next award that the Board of Publications will present is the Ned E. Freeman Writing Award. It's one of the biggest honors for me, and I think for the Board of Publications, each year to review the excellent material contributed to the Braille Forum and to view and observe the coverage that the Braille Forum gives to a wide variety of issues in the blindness community. This year's winner of the Ned E. Freeman Award was unable to be here, but this award will be accepted by her good friend, Donna Smith Whitty. In August of 2000, the article entitled Candle in the Window by Lisa Linnell Malden may have sparked just a bit of the hope and achievement that the Board of Publications looks at in excellent writing, but also in a very important message. Candle in the Wind, which Lisa wrote, outlines her story of taking just a little time to talk to a child about what it means to be blind and to educate that child, and the difference that taking that small bit of time to educate one child can make in the overall scheme of things. Her message was that one small amount of time can amount to a whole lot of advocacy for the future, and that's what it's all about. This award, the Ned E. Freeman Writing Award of the American Council of the Blind, is presented to Lisa Malden of Washington in recognition of writing excellence by and for people who are blind. Des Moines, Iowa, July 1st, 2001. Donna?
It is truly a pleasure for me tonight to accept this award on behalf of my very dear friend, Lisa Malden. Lisa asked me to convey to all of you her appreciation for recognizing her efforts in this very special way, and also her regrets that she can't be here to enjoy all the fun and games with us at the convention. She was with us last year in Louisville and had a very good time, and hopefully she'll be here with us next year. Lisa is a really strong and tireless advocate for blindness issues in many areas, but I think one of her greatest gifts is her ability to convey via the written word issues that we all face and issues that we all fight for on an ongoing basis. And this is what she did in Candle in the Wind. And I think that it, you know, through those words, she can touch many people and make a point that we all try to make in many different ways. So it is, I will deliver this plaque to her with your warmest regards, and I, in return, give you her very warmest appreciation and heartfelt thanks.
Thank you.
And finally this evening, as Paul mentioned, I will be stepping down as chair of the Board of Publications at the end of this convention. I accepted a limited term appointment 2 years ago, and it's been an honor and a privilege for me to serve ACB in the capacity of chair of the Board of Publications. Thank you very much, and God bless the American Council of the Blind. Thank you.
We're only going to have one award presented tonight by the Awards Committee of the American Council of the Blind, and to present that award, I'd like to introduce someone who it is important for us to recognize this evening. If there is one thing I ever heard from any of the students who are in her classes, is she makes us gather resources. If there's one thing that I heard from the readers of the American Council of the Blind's publication, the Braille Forum, that they valued every month, it was the Here and There column. If there was one person who symbolizes the Here and There column, one person who is most expert about resources for people who are blind or visually impaired, it's the person who's about to present this award. Will you join me in honoring and thanking for her years of tireless work on Here and There, Miss Elizabeth Lennon? Gosh, I hope Libby's coming.
Good.
I anticipated presenting an award this evening, not receiving one, so this is a tremendous surprise.
No, it's just words.
Words.
No award. No award, just words.
Well, good. I thoroughly enjoyed doing the Here and There column, and I'm so glad that many of you feel that you appreciated it. I always have enjoyed working with my students with resources, so I am pleased that that's recognized, too. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Now you get to present it.
What?
Now you get to present the award.
Which one?
The Membership Growth Award.
Oh,
go
yes,
ahead.
Yes. You, now
ahead.
You want
right
that?
Now. Right now.
Right now.
Right now.
Well, I do get to present an award, and I'm especially pleased to do this because it exemplifies what Paul said about membership growth. This award goes to an affiliate who has increased their membership 322% this year, and I think that's phenomenal. The National Association of Blind Students has grown from 55 to 171. And this is due to the leadership and energy of their president, April Shinholster, who certainly, I'm sure, has worked hard. And it's especially rewarding to me because we've had her in Kalamazoo this year, and she has been a real asset to our Kalamazoo Council of the Blind. April, where are you?
She's coming.
She's coming.
Here's the plaque. Libby, do you want me to read it?
Yes, if you would. I haven't seen it. So.
Okay. Yeah. On the plaque, it says, Membership Growth Award, American Council of the Blind, presented to National Alliance of Blind Students in recognition of largest percentage of membership increase for 2001 by the American Council of the Blind, Des Moines, Iowa, July 1st, 2001.
I really didn't expect this, and I think I just have to say thank you to all of the people who made this possible, because it's not just the person at the top leading an organization that causes growth. It's the board members, the state affiliates of that of our student group, and also the support of the national office, and most especially all of the people in ACB who have provided leadership to us and guidance. And I've thoroughly enjoyed working with all of you the past 2 years, and thank you very much.
Yeah. And here's your cue. Paul,
move up high. Paul, move up high.
Okay, cool. That pause was for a picture. and all the people who were catcalling were because I had my arm around April's shoulder. And it was a great pleasure. For the next part of our proceedings, and we're going to try to move very quickly, and let me say this to you. In fact, let me ask if Leroy's back. Are you back, Mr. Saunders? Not quite? Okay. Yes?
Yes. No.
Okay. We have a deadline tonight, so we're going to need to move as quickly as we can through the rest of our program. I know that we try to cram a lot into Sunday, and I don't know that I would have changed a lot tonight, but we're going to try to move as quickly as we can. The next segment of our program is the presentation of life memberships, and we're going to try to move that process along as quickly as we can. And to begin that process, it gives me great pleasure to introduce you to Jim Olson.
Yeah.
All right, I'm sorry. I lied. That's what happens when you try to do the program by memory. So United States senators and old broken down past presidents lie. So learn that. There's a moral to this story. Never read presidential biographies. Okay. What we're actually going to do is something that also gives me an honor to do, and we will try to move relatively quickly. It's taken an awfully long time to accomplish what it is that we're going to do tonight. It's also taken an awful lot of effort, in particular the efforts of Alan Beatty from the state of Colorado. Alan Beatty is here at our convention tonight, and there were many of us who a month ago thought he wouldn't be able to be here because he said he had a serious heart attack, was medically not very well, and many people felt it was going to be an awfully long time before Alan got here. However, what Alan managed to do was to get well enough to assume all of his duties. He was at our board meeting. He was active. He was involved. And he was also the person perhaps most responsible for the formation of an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind in the state of New Mexico. And it is my pleasant duty tonight to present to representative of the New Mexico Council of the Blind, their charter as an organization of the American Council of the Blind. And I'd like to begin by asking Jim Olson to read the charter, if he would. Or somebody.
Certificate of Affiliation.
Be it hereby publicly acknowledged that the American Council of the Blind in New Mexico Incorporated is recognized as a member in good standing with full membership rights thereof in the American Council of the Blind on this 14th day of January 2001 by the Board of Directors. Signed by Debbie Grubb, Membership Chairman, Paul Richards, President.
There you are, David. Hold on, smile. There is your charter that you can put on the wall somewhere. No problem. Yeah, you will be able to just taking pictures first. Okay, cool. Come and say a couple of words, but not many.
I don't
little to the right, right here. Right.
I'll hold the mic for you.
Cool. Here's David.
Okay. I just want to say that I feel very honored to have the opportunity to accept this award. I think we have a very dynamic group in New Mexico, and I want to give real thanks to our friend Alan Beatty and the Colorado chapter of ACB. We have for giving us the opportunity to equip ourselves to serve our community. This is the chapter that made Alan Beatty famous.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, you bet.
The other thing that I'd like to acknowledge, ladies and gentlemen, because I think it's important that we do that, is that the Durward K. McDaniel Committee of this organization worked to raise funds from other affiliates and from individuals to enable the New Mexico folks to be here this evening to receive their charter. I'd like to commend that committee for their work and to thank them. And now, maybe if I did it right, we could go on and do five other things, but we really better get to life membership. So it's with great pleasure that to begin the life membership process, I give you Jim Olson.
Patricia, I'll take you down.
Okay, we have a large task ahead of us tonight. There are 17 new life members since last year's convention. However, we have them all seated up front. And from the assistance of staff, of Patricia, Barbara, Sharon, and one other volunteer, Dot, I think I may have missed somebody in that group, we've got them all lined up to help move us. Two awards were presented at state affiliate meetings this year, and I'd like to recognize those. On behalf of the Badger Association of the Blind, Karen Przenka was presented a life membership in April at their state affiliate meeting, a leader within Wisconsin as well as a past Secretary of American Council of the Blind. The Mississippi Council of the Blind presented a life membership at their state convention. Mr. Paul Edwards was there to present that, and that was presented at that time to Howard Stevens. And Mr. Stevens did receive it at his home, and very unfortunately, within a couple weeks after having received it, he did die. But we were pleased to know that we were able to get it to him in time prior to that. Also, there are two people tonight that I'd like to recognize that have not here but have purchased life memberships themselves, a Mr. Martin Lee Sr. from Pennsylvania and Carcaras from Florida. They are not here tonight. Next, I would like to take, and as a surprise, make a lifetime membership award to the wife of our executive director, given by our executive director, to Susan Crawford. Susan?
Cool. Susan, we...
Somebody have
hello,
that.
Hello.
I don't believe this mic works.
Number eight. There we are. Number eight. It's supposed to be number nine. Number nine. Number nine. hi, Susan.
Hi.
It gives me great pleasure to present you this life membership acquired for you by your beloved husband, and perhaps you'd like to say a few words.
Well, thank you. I guess I would just like to say that we commit all that we have to ACB, that we hold in such deep respect and love, and we give to each other, and you've given so much to us, and you know, if you're ever in Silver Spring, come on by.
Congratulations. Here's your plaque. Smile.
There's going to be a Kodak moment after each one of these, I can
there
see.
There is.
Flashbulbs are flashing down here. The next one is presented by the Mississippi Council of the Blind to somebody that's doing a tremendous amount of work here at our convention, the director of the exhibit hall, Michael Smitherman, and also a leader within their organization. Michael?
Mr. Smitherman, Michael is a former president of the Mississippi Council of the Blind. He's active in a whole range of other things. He has a beautiful wife who sings a lot better than he does. But nevertheless, Michael, congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to thank the Council of Mississippi for their gift of a life membership to me and the honor of receiving it under your tenure as president. Mr. President.
Thank you, Michael.
Mr. Olson. Mr. Olson,
yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry. Okay, next there are two ladies from the great state of South Dakota who challenged each other to become life members, Rochelle Foley and Dawn Bush from Flowellen. So Dawn and Rochelle, would you come forward?
Shelley and Dawn have done a tremendous amount in South Dakota. I sometimes think that both of them together managed to keep South Dakota together some of the time. But also, Shelley, for the last several years, has been chair of our credentials committee, and I'm very pleased to see that she's prepared, as is Dawn, to commit the rest of their lives to doing any job we give them.
Thank you, Paul.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, this is Dawn Flewellen.
I'm oldest.
Yeah, there you are.
It is a great honor to be on the life membership role, and I want to dedicate this life membership in memory of one of the founders, a great advocate of ACB, someone who is no longer with us, but a champion to the cause, Delbert Ammon.
In a great sense, it's Delbert's fault that I'm here, by the way, so I certainly approve that, because Delbert and M.J. Schmidt were the two people who persuaded me to run for first vice president in 1987. Here's Shelley.
And it's certainly Delbert's fault that I'm here also, but we were just talking about this recently. I think my first convention was 25 years ago, which dates me, but I'm very privileged and honored to be a life member of the American Council of the Blind.
Cool. Now I get to go up beside Shelley and take a picture.
Ooh.
Be still, my heart.
Mr. Olson.
Well, I have Delbert to thank for being here, too. Yeah. He told me if I didn't vote for myself in the nominating committee from South Dakota, he would come and get me in Minnesota. Okay, next, the Randall Shepherd Vendors of America are honoring their six presidents and past presidents, and I'll read their names in alphabetical order, and some of them are here. George Abbott, Terry Camardella, Gene Heisler, Wally Menning, Homer Steele, and Raymond Washburn. And Kim?
I would like to acknowledge, ladies and gentlemen, that I received a call earlier in the weekend from Wally Menning, thanking the American Council of the Blind for his life membership and indicating how touched and honored he was. We're pleased that RSVA has chosen this way to express their commitment to the American Council of the Blind, and on behalf of ACB, I'd like to commit right back. So, Kim, how many of our folks are actually here?
Looks like there's about 7 or 8.
Wow.
Ken Nichols is saying 7 or 8, and I've got 6 plaques.
Well,
but we will explain that as we go along.
Let's do the current president first, I guess, shall we?
Terry?
Right,
okay, Ray Washburn.
Ray.
No. Yeah.
He's on your right.
Ray.
Are you here, sir?
Yes, sir.
Cool. Ray Washburn is, I think, the immediate past president of RSVA, and of course is from Oklahoma City and is one of the folks who barely managed to get through the Oklahoma City disaster. So it's a great honor to present you with a life membership, Ray. And is there anything you'd like to say?
Thank you, Paul. I'd like to thank the American Council of the Blind for this. It's kind of an honor. I can remember my first convention I ever went to was in Oklahoma City in 1970. And it was a very small convention at that time. And I'd like to thank American Council for the Blind and RSVA for, after the bombing, they stood beside me and supported me. And thank for all my friends. Thank you.
And if you say American Council for the Blind again, we'll take the plaque back.
I could have said NFB.
The current president of Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America and the person who's provided an immense amount of leadership that's moved RSVA in really appropriate directions and has demonstrated it's the number one organization of vendors in the United States is Terry Camerdahl from the great state of Louisiana.
Hey, Terry.
I'd just like to thank RSVA for honoring me with this lifetime membership. In the essence of time, I'll yield my time to Larry Jones. He's going to be a long-winded one.
Okay, so Larry's next? No, who's next?
I don't see Larry.
Who's
I'm
next?
I'm receiving it for Homer Steele.
Okay, and to receive the award for Homer Steele, I give you Larry Stone. Jones, hello.
Hello.
I'll learn to talk.
Okay. I'm Larry Jones from Illinois, and I'm very honored to receive this for Homer Steele. Homer Steele, as many of you know him, he has worked tirelessly for the blind for 51 years to achieve self-reliance and independence. And a lot of his work was in the vending facility program, but he's also did a lot of nationwide work also. And Homer is tonight in intensive care, and if you would, if you believe in prayer, please say one for him and his wife and family. Thank you.
Next is one of the first RSVA presidents who I got to know real well. He's from the great state of Texas, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you the cowboy from Texas, Gene Heisler.
I don't know how much cowboy it is, but I'd just like to say this. In my 73 years, I've had three really great things happen. First, my wife put up with me for 53 years. And one night in 1966, as a scoutmaster, we graduated 5 Eagle Scouts, which is a pretty good achievement. And then from 88 to 94, I served as president for this great organization, the Randolph Shepherd Vendors, and our association was American Council of Blind. And I appreciate everything that everybody's done for me. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Mr. Olson.
Mr. Edwards.
Go for
okay.
it.
Okay. The next is a couple from the state of Connecticut. They joined as life members by sending their contribution to me. I'd like to recognize Steve Dresser and Neil.
Marcia Nigro Dresser.
Excuse me.
No.
Marcia Nigro Dresser.
I've had the pleasure of spending lots of time with both of these folks, both in the state of Connecticut and elsewhere. We spent lots of evenings talking about what it's like to be blind and how we can make stuff better. I haven't seen Marcia yet, so I get my hug. So where's my hut?
All right.
My hut. Here,
well, there it is.
Ooh. Congratulations on your life membership, and let me recognize Marcia first. Here's a mic.
Thank you, Mr. President.
No, go ahead. I'll hold it for you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. I guess I've been involved in ACB since 1978 indirectly and started working harder, I guess about 15 years ago. And the work of ACB has become very important to me. I've also made some wonderful friends through this organization and who I couldn't do it without. So I decided it was time to commit to a life membership and join the honored ranks. So thank you, Mr. President.
You're welcome.
And there's your plaque. And I'd like to recognize her worst half, Steve Dresser, who is one of these techie people, but who also has an awful lot of heart. You know, for a guy, he's awfully lucky to have been able to persuade Marcia to put up with him. So it gives me great pleasure to present a life membership to Steve Dresser.
Thank you, Mr. President. I haven't worked as long or as hard, I guess, at being in ACB as Marcia has, being a more recent joiner of the organization. But I decided, like her, that it was time to commit to something that I believe in very much, and that is the purpose and the things that this organization does. It may not be perfect, but I really think it's the best we've got, and I think I want to give it my all, and this is a way that I think I can do that. And I thank you all.
Hold the back up here. You see it?
Another photographic opportunity.
One more. Whoa.
Thank you, Ken. Okay, the next person that is being honored tonight is being honored as a surprise. This person is being honored with a life membership by the state organization in which she's a member, been very active in, but also is being honored by a very large number of individuals from that state. So, Charlie Hodge, from now on, we need to take a look at a new way, and that's not just as a state affiliate, but by many members joining together and a force to take and honor somebody. This person has been a volunteer at many of our state affiliate, or many of our conventions. Matter of fact, has been a volunteer for 6 years. And she has also helped volunteer tonight. She has brought the dressers forward, and now Dot Taylor from Memphis, Tennessee. Actually, I had purpose in getting you up here, Dot. I got my... Also, Dot celebrates, for the last 6 years that she's come to the convention, celebrates her birthday on July 2nd, and tomorrow Dot is 76. Remember that, the year of independence. Congratulations, Dot.
I got my hello. Thank you. I got my first hug from Dot yesterday, but I'm glad I got to get another one. She's a great person to hug. Congratulations, Dot.
Thank you very much. I'm usually not at a loss for words, but thanks, everybody. It's wonderful.
And Dot, I have to tell you that back in Memphis, Tennessee, there's a big group listening to ACB radio tonight.
She said, "I'll get y'all back."
I know, she said that. Yeah. Mr. President.
And she will. Yes.
Mr. President, that takes care of the 17 for tonight. I think I did it in record speed for you.
I think there will be
five more later this week, and we will take and recognize them later this week.
Excellent. I very much appreciate your work. Let's thank Jim Olson. Now, I don't know if she's back up there now, but if she is, I would like to recognize Rochelle Foley to do the first credentials report.
At least. That was to have begun it.
That was really sneaky and a little unfair to call on Shelley while I was on the way up and she didn't know I was going to do it. But nevertheless, here is Shelley.
Let me find that mic. Good evening. I would like to start out by just thanking the Credentials Committee. Well, first of all, I want to start out by thanking all of you who make our work so much easier every year when you get those dues and lists in on time and get all that credentials work done. But I'd like to thank my committee members, and they are Sue Amateur from Washington, Gary LeGates from Maryland, Steve Dresser from Connecticut, Cynthia Towers from Washington, Judy Cannon from Massachusetts, and Patsy Jones from South Carolina. Okay. In just a few minutes, the secretary will be reading the roll call of affiliates, and at that time, the number of votes given to your state will be called. We did have some affiliates that we met with today and discussed individual situations. When the roll is read, if you are not in agreement with the number of votes listed for your affiliate, I'll be here at the podium to take down your name so that you can appeal that on the floor in the morning before the final report of the Credentials Committee.
Cool.
Okay, I think that's it.
Thanks. Just before we begin the roll call, I have a couple of announcements that I'd like to do, and I'd also like to recognize Leroy Saunders for an extremely important announcement as well. The entire Illinois delegation is requested to come to room 2207, and I presume that's in the Marriott, as quickly as possible after tonight's session. It'll only take about 15 minutes, but is of great importance to all Illinois folks. So that is room 2207. And if Leroy's here, or close to a mic, I will recognize Leroy for an announcement.
Thank you, Paul. First of all, I want to say to all of you, I'm amazed at how well you folks are getting back and forth to these hotels over the Skywalk. You can't believe how concerned I've been about that. And how much we scratched our heads trying to figure out how we could help you and how we could put some signage and so forth. And I'm about decided we didn't need to do anything. Y'all are just doing great. I would like for y'all tonight, when we go back from this meeting, if you would, to please walk to your right, to the right wall as you're walking, and then that way our electric carts can have an opportunity to pass you on the left side. Let's talk about electric carts just for a couple minutes. We were fortunate in getting these carts donated to us, and we had to go through quite a bit as far as proving liability insurance and so forth in order to get authorization to run them on the Skywalk. The purpose of getting these was to try to assist people who have some mobile problems and therefore needed some assistance. They could walk, but maybe not walk that far. And we thought the carts would be an easier way of doing it than just shuffling with people back and forth with hotel vans. However, that's not to limit the shuttles from the hotel. They are still available. But consequently, we are trying to help those that really need it rather than make it available just for anybody that wants to ride over here. So I hope you understand that if you ask for a cart and the driver says he can't carry, you'll understand why it's being done. Also, these carts are built for two people, one driver and one passenger. And that's what we need to stick to. And I know there are couples who would like to ride, and I know sometimes two people are dying to get over here, but that is not safe. And we're very concerned about the safety of everybody that is involved in riding these carts. Also, these are golf carts, and people have gotten on the back, hanging on to the straps for the golf bags, and this is a big no-no. So please don't do that. We've asked the drivers not to let it happen, and we've had a couple cases where the driver said they'd start off and people jump on. But please, people, we don't want anyone hurt, believe me. So we need to make sure that people follow the directions. Now, we've had a great evening, and I might throw a little damp water on it. I don't mean to do that. But we have a problem in that with this convention center, we have to abide by their rules. And their rule is that everybody's got to be out of here by between 10:30 and quarter to 11. And that's going to mean a lot of people jumping out at one time. And we're going to have our carts out here. And again, for the people who have a real difficulty with their mobility as far as walking is concerned, we will try to assist them. We've got to have the carts back here around 10:30 because we got to plug them all in and get them ready for tomorrow. Also, Lost and Found is at our information desk downstairs. And if you have lost anything, ask there. And anything that's of what we think is maybe some value, we lock up at night in the convention office. And whoever it was that lost that checkbook on a skywalk, we have it in the convention office. Thank you.
One final announcement. This is an announcement that is headed Raffle for Opening Night. Win $10,000. You could win $10,000 in the ACB drawing, or you could win $500, $300, or $200, and also benefit the American... And also benefit the ACB National Scholarship Program. Only 300 tickets will be sold. They cost $100 each, and you can buy a ticket with three or four friends and share the prize equally or unequally, depending on how much you spend. Winning tickets will be drawn on Friday at the reception prior to the ACB banquet. They've conned me into buying one. You do not have to be present to win, unfortunately. Many affiliates and local chapters have bought tickets. To purchase tickets, see Barbara Hayes, Julie Carroll, Pat Beattie, Lorinda Lacey, Terry Pacheco, Susan Crawford, or Billie Jean Keith. This is a project of the Nova chapter of the Old Dominion affiliate and the American Council Resource Development Committee. Check the AC newspaper or telephone newsline for the location of the table with bells and balloons where you can also buy tickets. There they are. You'll be hearing that tomorrow. You can't buy any after tonight's session because we're throwing you out. But tomorrow you can buy tickets, and the bells will be ringing. Thank
you. Mr. President.
Sir.
This is Jay Doudna. It's somebody I just need to look for quickly, and I can't find her. If Mae Davis is in this room, could she stand up and say, I'm here? Thank you.
Okay. Many of us are completing our offices in the American Council of the Blind, and while I'll have a little bit more to say about her tomorrow, it gives me great pleasure to introduce, to begin the calling of the roll, a person who I've come to value, respect, and admire tremendously, and in fact regard as virtually indispensable. Whoever follows her as Secretary of the American Council of the Blind better be pretty darn good. It gives me great pleasure to introduce to call the roll Miss Oprah Winfrey herself, Cynthia Towers.
Yeah. Jay, could you tell people where the mics are, please?
Yes. There are three microphones toward the front of the room. They are in the center aisles. So if you walk toward Paul and Cynthia in the front of the room, and then there are three two-thirds of the way back, right at the last aisle that runs across this room. I've placed them there just to the right side as you walk across the room. So you'll find them there by the chairs. There are three of them. So there's six on the floor. So the easiest way to do this is to go to your nearest mic and stand kind of in a line. When Cynthia calls your name, you'll be ready.
Thank you. As usual, what I need is your delegate, your alternate delegate, your delegate to the nominating committee, and how many chairs you will need. You'll have to forgive me if I sound like I lisp a little bit. I had a front tooth removed a couple of weeks ago. So I'm dealing with a fake tooth in front. So if I lisp a little bit, you'll have to forgive me. Alabama, and I do want to say, too, and I'll have a little bit more to say tomorrow and certainly on Friday when I get to cry, but I know we are running short of time, but I do want to thank everybody for their support over the last 6 years, and this is one of the last times I'll be able to do this, Mr. President. Yeah. Alabama Council of the Blind, you receive 8 votes. May I have your data, please?
Yes. My name is David Trott. I will be the delegate. Joan Ridgway will be the alternate delegate. I will be the delegate to the nominating committee, and we need seating for 25.
Alaska Independent Blind, 20 votes.
This is Lynn Corral, and Lynn Corral, K-O-R-A-L, is the delegate. Sandy Sanderson is the alternate delegate, and I am the delegate to the nominating committee, and we'll need 10 chairs.
25.
Thank you, and thank you for spelling your name. And those of you who have difficult last names, you know who you are. So it's easier to spell it than to say you have it on the record. The time it takes you to say you have it on the record, you could have spelled it. Arizona Council of the Blind, 8 votes.
Tom Belshon, delegate. Dan Martinez, alternate. Ruth Druding, the delegate to the nominating committee. And 15 chairs, please.
How many chairs?
15.
Thank you. Arkansas Council of the Blind, 5 votes.
Sandra Edwards, I'm the delegate. Carol Donahoe, that is D-O-N-O-H-O-O, will be the alternate delegate. I'm Imogene Johnson, I-M-O-G-E-N-E. Johnson will be for the nominating committee. We'll need 10 chairs.
Thank you. California Council of the Blind, 25 chairs. Oh, well, they might
need
25 chairs.
We'd love to have them, Cynthia.
What's that, hon?
We'd like to have the 25 chairs.
Okay.
Catherine Skivers, delegate. Jeff Tom, alternate delegate. Tom, T-H-O-M. Catherine Skivers, nominating committee. The dilemma is always for California. We think we need 25.
See, he told you. ACB of Colorado, 6 votes.
This is Rod Chard. I will act as delegate. Karen Woodford will be the alternate. I will represent us in nominating committee, and we need 19 chairs.
All right. Connecticut Council of the Blind, 2 votes.
I'm Ellen Telker. I will be the delegate. The alternate, I believe, is Marcia Dresser. I'll do nominating, and I guess we probably need about 7 chairs.
Thank you. Delaware Council of the Blind, 1 vote.
Thank you. I'm Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, Howell, H-O-W-E-L-L, and I will be the delegate. Our alternate is Marion, M-A-R-I-O-N, Howell. I will be serving on the nominating committee, and we need 4 chairs. Thank you.
D.C. Council of the Blind, 3 votes.
D.C. Council of the Blind, the delegate is Oral Miller. The alternate will be Jeanette Girard. The representative to the nominating committee will be McKinley Mac Young. And we need 10 seats.
Florida Council of the Blind, 25 votes. Are you still counting your votes, Florida? Where are you?
No, we were looking for the mic. We can count every now and then. Robert Miller, delegate. Jesus Garcia, alternate delegate. Jesus Garcia, nominating committee. And we will need 20 chairs.
Georgia Council of the Blind, 11 votes.
Council of the Blind, have the delegate is Jack Lewis, myself. The alternate delegate is Peggy Chavis, C-H-A-V-I-S. The representative to the nominating committee is myself, and we would appreciate for seating 20 rocking chairs.
20 rocking chairs they need. Ladies and gentlemen, in discussing with Jim Olson, he has received a letter from the Aloha Council of the Blind and that they have dissolved, so therefore I will not be calling their name during the roll anymore this week. Hawaii Association of the Blind, 2 votes.
Aloha from Hawaii. Aloha. This is Warren Toyama. We have 18 people here from Hawaii this time. Don't worry, they all swam. Don Thompson will be the delegate and serve on the nominating committee. And Milton Ota will serve as the alternate delegate.
Thank you. Idaho Council of the Blind, 3/4 vote.
Okay. Roxy Homstad, R-O-X-apostrophe-E-H-O-M-S-T-A-D, delegate. Roxy Homstad, alternate delegate. And that would be Roxy Homstad is going to the alternate to the nominating committee. We will need seating of about 1.
Give her a hand. Wonderful to have you. Illinois Council of the Blind, 12 votes.
M.J. Schmidt will be the first delegate. My alternate will be Bill Van Dyke. And going to the nominating committee will be Camille Caffarelli. That's C-A-F-F as in Francis, A-R-E-L-L-I.
Chairs?
20, please.
Thank you. ACB of Indiana, 10 votes.
ACB of Indiana, Dolly Souter, delegate. Earlene Hughes, alternate. Nominating committee is Dolly Souter.
Chairs?
Chairs, 10.
Thank you. Iowa Council of the United Blind, 7 votes.
Donna Seliger, delegate. Michael Barber, alternate delegate. Nominating committee, Michael Barber. We would like 30 chairs. The rest of our people are going to be out working, and may we draw for a $100 bill at the very end?
Okay. Thank President you. Says yes. Kansas Association of the Blind and Visually Impaired, 12 votes.
Sanford Alexander, delegate. Robert Chafin, C-H-A-F-F-I-N, alternate delegate. Robert Chafin, nominating committee, 15 chairs.
Kentucky Council of the Blind, 12 votes.
Kentucky Council of the Blind, delegate Jim Shaw, alternate delegate Patty Cox, nominating committee Jim Shaw, and we need 12 chairs.
Thank you. Bluegrass Council of the Blind, 3 votes.
Bluegrass Council of the Blind, Adam Rushival, R-U-S-C-H-I-V-A-L. I am the delegate, the alternate delegate, and will be the nominating delegate. And need 1 chair.
Thank you. Louisiana Council of the Blind, 3 votes.
Louisiana Council of the Blind, Vernon Daigle, D-A-I-G-L-E, delegate. Kim Venable, V-E-N-A-B-L-E, alternate delegate. Dan Marshall, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L, on the nominating committee. We need
chairs.
About 8 chairs, please.
Thank you. ACB of Maine, 1.5 votes. Is anyone on the floor from ACB of Maine? ACB of Maryland, 6 votes.
Al Pietrolungo will be delegate, P-I-E-T-R-O-L-U-N-G-O.
Ralph Sanders as alternate, and Patrick Sheehan will be on the nominating committee, S-H-E-E-H-A-N. And we need 20 chairs.
Thank you. Bay State Council of the Blind, 15 votes.
I'm Judy Cannon, J-U-D-I. I will serve as the delegate and to the nominating committee. Our alternate will be Jerry Barrier, B-E-R-R-I-E-R, and we will need 20 chairs.
Thank you. Michigan Council of the Blind, 10 votes.
Michigan Council of the Blind, George Illingworth, I-L-L-I-N-G-W-O-R-T-H, will be the delegate. Elizabeth Lennon will be the alternate delegate. And Sue Illingworth will serve on the nominating committee. We need 8 chairs.
Thank you. ACB of Minnesota, 4 votes.
Delegate will be Walter Waranka, W-A-R-A-N-K-A. The alternate is Linda Oliva. The nominating representative will be myself, Walter Waranka, and we request 10 chairs, please.
Thank you. Mississippi Council of the Blind, 11 votes.
The delegates, Ken Maddox, alternate delegate, Donna Smith Whitty, and the nominating committee person is Ralph Smitherman, and we need 22 chairs.
All right. Missouri Council of the Blind, 25 votes.
The delegate will be Chip Haley, H-A-I-L-E-Y. The alternate delegate will be Bill Benson. The delegate to the nominating committee will be Jerry Annunzio, and we need 40 chairs.
Yeah. All right. ACB of Nebraska, 2 votes.
Nebraska will have as its delegate Jim Yurak. That's J-I-M. Last name J-I-R-A-K. Just to clarify there.
Would be G-Y-M.
Okay. The alternate delegate is Don Pullman. That's P as in Papa, O-H-L-M-A-N-N. The nominating committee is Bill Orester, O-R-E-S-T-E-R. And we would need 15 chairs.
Thank you. Nevada Council of the Blind, 5 votes.
Nevada Council of the Blind, Delegate Jean Payton, P-E-Y-T-O-N, alternate Waynette Quarles, W-A-Y-N-E-T-T-E, Q-U-A-R-L-E-S, and Waynette will also be our nominating committee person.
Chairs?
Oh, 5, please.
Thank you. ACB of New Mexico Incorporated, yes, 1 vote. Oh, he got his charter and he left, huh?
Okay. I'm David Armijo. I'm the delegate. Alternate delegate is Maria Luisa Armijo. And we need 2 chairs.
Who's going to the nominating committee?
I'm going to the nominating committee.
All right. ACB of New York State, 12 votes.
The American Council of the Blind of New York, not state. Laurie Schoff will be the delegate. Mike Godino will be the alternate, and Gene Mann will go to the nominating committee, M-A-N-N.
Chairs?
25.
Yeah. Did I bypass New Jersey by mistake? I guess I did. Sorry. New Jersey Council of the Blind, 5 votes. Is anyone on the floor from New Jersey affiliate? All right, we'll put a little question mark there. North Carolina Council of the Blind, 10 votes.
Wayne Yelton, delegate. Ron Eller, alternate. Ron Eller, nominating committee, 15 seats.
Thank you. North Dakota Association of the Blind, 7 votes.
Alan Peterson. Our delegate is Mark Kiefler. And his spelling on his last name is K-U-E-F-F-L-E-R. I will serve as the alternate, and I will also serve as our nominating committee delegate. We need 3 chairs.
Thank you. ACB of Ohio, 12 votes.
This is Ron Fries. I'll be the delegate, F-R-I-E-S-S. Jill Tobin will be the alternate, and Arlene Cohn will be our delegate to the nominating committee.
Chairs?
20 chairs.
Thank you. Oklahoma Council of the Blind, 25 votes.
Marilyn Sanders, delegate. Judy Poole Hansen, alternate delegate. Marilyn Sanders for the nominating committee, and we need 30 chairs, please.
Thank you. Oregon Council of the Blind, 11 votes.
John Fleming will be the delegate. That's Fleming with one M. Darian Hartman will be the alternate, D-A-R-I-A-N, and John Fleming will do the nominating committee. We need 15 chairs.
Thank you. Pennsylvania Council of the Blind, 25 votes.
Madam Secretary, Pennsylvania Council of the Blind delegate will be John Horst. Alternate delegate will be Rudolph Thompson. And Jay Doudna, that's me, to the nominating committee, and we'll need 30 chairs.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, ACB of Puerto Rico and the Rhode Island Council of the Blind have not submitted money and or lists for some time, so in the future roll calls, they will not be called as well. ACB of South Carolina, 3 votes.
Patsy Jones be the delegate. Alternate delegate, Keith Moreland, M-O-R-E-L-A-N-D. Patsy Jones, nominating committee, and 3 chairs.
Thank you. South Dakota Association of the Blind, 8 votes.
South Dakota Association of the Blind. Yes, sir. Delegate is Rochelle Foley. Alternate delegate is Dawn Flewellen, F-L-E-W-W-E-L-L-I-N. And Dawn Flewellen will also go to nominating. We need 8 chairs.
Tennessee Council of the Blind, 8 votes.
Tennessee Council of the Blind, Hattie Bond will be delegate. Ken Loden, alternate delegate. Hattie Bond will serve as nominating representative. We need 12 chairs.
Thank you. ACB of Texas, 12 votes.
ACB of Texas, Chris Prentice will be the delegate. Ed Bradley will be the alternate. Ed Bradley will go to the nominating committee, and we need 15 chairs.
Thank you. Utah Council of the Blind, 21 votes.
Utah Council of the Blind, Linda Braithwaite, B-R-A-I-T-H-W-A-I-T-E, delegate. Bernice, B-E-R-N-E-C-E, Stradley, S-T-R-A-D-L-E-Y, alternate. Anna Jeffrey, to the nominating committee. We need seating for 20, please.
Thank you. Vermont Council of the Blind, 2 votes.
The Vermont Council of the Blind delegate will be Mike Richman, R-I-C-H-M-A-N. The alternate will be Carol Ann Richman, spelled the same way. The nominating will be Mike Richman, and we need 2 chairs.
I love that voice. You should read for talking books. Sorry. Sorry, having a hot flash up here. All right. Old Dominion Council of the Blind, 4 votes.
Madam Secretary, Old Dominion Council of the Blind delegate will be myself, Linda Brody Myers, that's B-R-O-A-D-Y hyphen M-Y-E-R-S. Alternate delegate will be Scott White. I'm sorry, April Nash. Nominating delegate will be Scott White.
Chairs?
30.
Thank you. Virginia Association of the Blind, 25 votes.
Virginia Association of the Blind, Inc. Delegate Mary McCann, M-C-C-A-N-N. Alternative delegate is Christine Cutchins, C-U-T-C-H-I-N-S. And the nominating delegate will be Nelson Malden, 35 seats.
Thank you. Washington Council of the Blind, 10 votes.
Burl Colley, delegate. Sue Sather, alternate delegate. I'll be attending the nominating committee meeting, and we need 25 chairs.
All right. As with Puerto Rico, Rhode Island, same with Mountain State Council, they have not been incommunicado for some time, so I will not be calling their name as well. Badger Association of the Blind, 25 votes.
I'm Becky Williams. I'm the delegate, and Paulette Bartelt, B-A-R-T-E-L-T, is our alternate delegate. Our nominating delegate is Adrian DeBlay, D-E, capital B-L-A-E-Y, and we need 20 chairs, please.
Thank you. Wyoming Council of the Blind, 1 vote.
Oh, you're going that way? Whenever you go. Yeah, I'm just... Oh, is it okay?
Is anyone on the floor from Wyoming? They get a question mark, too. All right, we will start with the special interest affiliates. Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, 5 votes.
Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, Delegate Teddy Joy Remhild, T-E-D-D-I-E hyphen J-O-Y, Remhild, R-E-M-H-I-L-D. I will be the delegate. Jean Sanders will be the alternate delegate. That's J-E-A-N-N-E. And I will be the delegate to the nominating committee, and we need 8 chairs.
Thank you. ACB Government Employees, 2 votes.
Government Employees, Billie Jean Keith will be the delegate. The alternate delegate is Barbara Hayes. And the delegate to the nominating committee is Mitch Pomerantz, P-O-M-E-R-A-N-T-Z.
Chairs?
Two, please.
Thank you. ACB Radio Amateurs, 2 votes.
ACB Radio Amateurs, the delegate is Walter Siren. Alternate delegate, Mike Duke. Delegate to the nominating committee, Rob Rogers. Our members will sit with their respective state affiliates.
Thank you. As with the other states, I've heard similar information with regard to ACB social service providers, that they are inactive at this time, so therefore their name will not be called on further rolls. American Blind Lawyers Association, 5 votes.
It's Jeff Tom, and I will... Is my mic on? Yes.
Yes.
I will be the delegate. The alternate will be Julie Carroll, and Jim Kracht, K-R-A-C-H-T, will be our representative to the nominating committee.
Chairs?
And 5 chairs.
Thank you. American Council of Blind Lions, 12 votes.
12 votes for Blind Lions. Alan Beatty here. Our delegate will be... Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Alive and well. Our delegates will be Ruth Bear. Alternate would be George Bear. Our nominating is George Ellingsworth.
Chairs?
6 or 8. 6.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And glad to have you with us. The dog's glad, too. Good timing, Fido. All right. Blind Friends of Lesbians and Gays, 2 votes.
BFLAG's delegate is Lynn Zelvin, Z-E-L-V-I-N.
Closer to the mic, please.
Sure. BFLAG's delegate is Lynn Zelvin, Z-E-L-V-I-N. Alternate is Connie David. And to the nominated committee, Rob Hill. We'd like 8 chairs, please.
Thank you. Braille Revival League, 13 votes.
Braille Revival League, the delegate will be Chris Gray. The alternate delegate will be Deanna Noriega. We'll be represented on the nominating committee by Gary Patterson. And we'd like to have 4 chairs, please.
Thank you. Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, 12 votes.
CCLVI's delegate, Barbara Kron, K-R-O-N. Alternate, Ken Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T. On the nominating committee, Janice Stanger, J-A-N-I-S, S-T-A-N-G-E-R. 10 chairs.
Thank you. Council of Families with Visual Impairment, 4 votes.
I'm Pat Beatty. Delegate for Council of Families with Visual Impairment, the alternate is Ruth Druding, D-R-U-D-I-N-G, and will be represented on the nominating committee by Linda Brody Myers, B-R-O-A-D-Y, hyphen M-Y-E-R-S.
Chairs.
We'll be sitting with our state delegations.
Thank you. Friends in Art of ACB, 4 votes.
Our delegate will be Roger Peterson, alternate Harvey Miller. Delegate to the nominating committee will also be Roger Peterson, and we'll take 5 chairs.
Thank you. Guide Dog Users Incorporated, 25 votes.
Guide Dog Users Incorporated, our delegate will be Sheila Styron, S-T-Y-R-O-N. Our alternate delegate will be Lisa Salinger, S-A-L-I-N-G-E-R. I'm Debbie Grubb. I will be the delegate to the nominating committee, and we'll need 4 chairs. Most of our people will be sitting with our delegations.
Thank you. Independent Visually Impaired Enterprisers, 4 votes.
This is Carla Hayes, president of Ivy, and I will be our delegate. Our alternate will be Berna Specht. Let me spell that, B-E-R-N-A-S-P-E-C-H-T. And since I can't seem to track down our nominating, I guess I'll have to do that. So unless there's a change, I'll do that.
Thank chairs.
You. And we will need 10 chairs.
Library Users of America, 4 votes.
Winifred Downing will be the delegate. The alternate will be John Taylor. And Winifred Downing will be the member on the nominating committee.
Chairs.
We're sitting with our states.
National Alliance of Blind Students, 7 votes.
NAB's delegate is N.G. Wu. The alternate delegate is Richard Retta. And to the nominating committee, it will be April Schinholster. And we would like to have 15 lazy boys, but chairs will do.
Okay. We'll call Sears. We'll see what they can do. National Association of Blind Teachers, 3 votes.
National Association of Blind Teachers, Linda Oliva, O-L-I-V-A, delegate, Marcia Dresser, alternate. Linda Oliva will go to the nominating committee, and we should be able to get by with about 5 chairs because a lot of us will sit with state delegations.
Thank you. Randolph Shepherd, Vendors of America, 25 votes.
Randolph Shepherd, Vendors of America, Artis Bazin, delegate, Kim Venable, alternate delegate, nominating committee will be Richard Byrd. And just give us 5 chairs. Most of us will be sitting around in our states.
Thank you. Visually Impaired Data Processors International, 3 votes.
Visually Impaired Data Processors delegate will be Ray Campbell. The alternate delegate will be Frank Welty. And the nominating committee representative will be Frank Welty. And VidPi will need 3 chairs.
Thank you. Visually Impaired Veterans of America, 2 votes.
Visually Impaired Veterans of America, Brian Hick delegate, alternate David Dowlin, and nominating committee Brian Higgins, and we'll need 6 chairs.
Mr. President, that completes the roll.
I would like to recognize from the great state of Iowa to draw a door prize for $100, the door prize folk.
The winner is, if she's here, Sandra Sternweiss.
Sandra Sternwhite?
Weiss.
Sternweiss.
Is she here? Draw again, please.
Jewel Spears from Hudson, North Carolina.
Schultz Piers?
No, Jewel.
Jules Piers from North Carolina. Trent, right. Got it, door prize person?
Sure.
Okay, another one.
Rochelle Foley from Sioux Falls.
All right. Now, you see, if she wasn't chair of credentials, she might not even still be here.
Rochelle, we'll see that you get the money.
Shelley, congratulations. Ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate your patience for this evening, and I would equally appreciate it if you would make your way in an orderly and rapid fashion out of the building. So we are in recess until 8:30 sharp tomorrow morning, but don't miss the entertainment between 8 and 8:30.
And you will be able to do that by tuning in, or rather not miss us, by tuning in at 8 o'clock to ACB Radio. Thank you for tuning in this evening. Hope you've enjoyed the coverage. And we say good night from Des Moines.